Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Going to read this morning Canto 3, Chapter 14. Text number 50 and 51 ends the chapter. So this chapter is pregnancy of Diti in the evening. The storyline is Kasyapa, great sage, very, very elevated personality, received as wives, plural, daughters of Daksha for a specific purpose, namely he, Kasyapa, and some other sages that are sons of Brahma, were to populate the earth and the universe that Brahma had just created with good praja, offspring. And there were two of the sisters, the daughters of Daksha. Aditi already had 9 children. And Diti was anxious, envious, and impatient. And so, knowing better, she did it anyway. She approached her husband at an improper time and pleaded with him to provide a child or children. And she knew better because of the improper time as well as the consciousness behind her request. Nonetheless, Kasyapa consented. Diti became pregnant, and then Kasyapa informed her of the bad news that for the reasons mentioned, you will have twins, children, and they'll be asuras. They'll be, by nature, terrorists, demoniac, and describes that what their activities would be like. And she was not surprised, shocked, but not surprised. And made some response, and he said, here's the good news. Because of their extreme power, Lord Vishnu himself will come, because there'll be not just Middle East terrorists, they're going to be universal terrorists, and he will destroy them. They'll be liberated from all of their sinful tendencies by contact with Lord Vishnu. And then she pleaded that they may not be, this is good news, they may not be, although they're tormenting the brahmanas, they won't be killed by the brahmanas because that doesn't have the same outcome as one who becomes killed by Vishnu. Everyone has to die. And then Kasyapa said, because of your good qualities, so she made a mistake and had to pay for that mistake, but because of your good qualities, and he lists her good qualities, you'll have some good fortune, additional good fortune, that is, the grandson of one of these two, that's Hiranyakashipu's son, so your grandson he will be this exceptionally qualified personality. He's attributing, so this is sometimes the question comes, how did Hiranyakashipu become the father of such an elevated person? Well, one answer is it's a lila of the Lord. Another answer is because of the good quality of Diti, she was given this reward or benediction that her grandson would be perfect. And as we heard, well, so, yes, we've heard from the seventh canto, when Prahlad asks Lord Nrisimhadev for his father, Hiranyakashipu, although he's done so many bad things, to be liberated from the reactions of those bad things. And Lord Nrisimhadev said, it's already done. Simply because your qualification, and he is your father, not only him, but seven generations liberated, which means Diti is included, the grandmother of Prahlad. So it's a great benediction for your mother and father and seven generations before you, if you become a very qualified devotee. You can grant, or your qualification is distributed to those, although they may not have done anything especially wonderful. Hiranyakashipu certainly didn't. And Diti, anyway, so benediction goes to others. Completely, if you could just, like, what would be the best gift I can give for my mother and father or my grandmother? Free them from the cycle of birth and death. Not only temporary happiness or temporary mitigation of distress, but no more duality of material existence. That's quite a gift. Supposing you don't make it all the way, still, whatever merit goes to you goes to them. You can't make a better gift. No better service. So, Kashyapa is going on. This is Canto 3. He hasn't appeared yet till Canto 7. And also, this is earlier in the creation period because Hiranyakashipu hasn't been born yet. That comes, the narration comes in the Bhagavatam a little bit later. Still early in the creation, Brahma is just created. He has these sons. The sons now have wives. The wives and the Kashyapa and these sons. There's others that are Prajapatis. They're filling up the universe. Quite a different picture than chemical evolution. Quite a different picture than, you know, the first living entity is chemically evolved. Whatever they say, and it changes. Combination of amino acids making the first one cell living entity and then evolving and evolving and evolving and evolving and evolving. The Vedic picture is the firstborn living entity is the most intelligent. And then there's devolution, not evolution. Anyway, different picture. So the qualities of a pure devotee we're hearing from Kashyapa, specific to Prahlad, but generally speaking, we're getting a picture of a pure devotee. We get that picture right in the first canto when the birth of Parikshit Maharaj takes place and the astrologers are brought in. Whole chapter of what they qualified astrologers see in the chart of Prahlad, newborn little baby, his qualities will be like this and this and this. And they're specific to him, but in a general sense, they're qualities of a great soul, even more, a pure devotee of the Lord. So that's what we're hearing. The chapter is about to end. Text 50. Translation. Your grandson will be able to see, comma, inside and outside, comma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose wife is the beautiful Goddess of Fortune. The Lord can assume the form desired by the devotee, and his face is always beautifully decorated with earrings. Purport. It is predicted herewith that the grandson of Diti, Prahlad Maharaj, would not only see the personality of Godhead within himself by meditation, but would also be able to see him personally with his eyes. This direct vision is possible only for one who is highly elevated in Krishna consciousness, for the Lord is not possible to see with material eyes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has multifarious eternal forms, such as Krishna, Baladev, Sankarshan, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Vasudev, Narayana, Ramana, Sringa, Varaha, and Vamana, etc. And the devotee of the Lord knows all those Vishnu forms. A pure devotee becomes attached to one of the eternal forms of the Lord, and the Lord is pleased to appear before him in the form desired. A devotee does not imagine something whimsical about the form of the Lord, nor does he ever think that the Lord is impersonal and can assume a form desired by the non-devotee. The non-devotee has no idea of the form of the Lord, and thus he cannot think of any one of the above-mentioned forms. But whenever a devotee sees the Lord, he sees him in a most beautifully decorated form, accompanied by his constant companion, the Goddess of Fortune, who is eternally beautiful. In our Nisringa prayers, Bahir Nisringo, Hridaye Nisringo. Bahir means outside. Hridaye means in the heart. So, it's in our offering of a song of praise to Lord Nisringadev, but mutually it's an offering of praise to the great devotees like Prahlad, who can see both within and without. Some examples, seeing both within and without. We hear from the seventh canto narration when Hiranyakashipu challenged Prahlad, "Where are you getting your power?" Prahlad said, "From the same place you are, Vishnu." "Where is this Vishnu?" "He's everywhere." It's not in the Bhagavatam, but it's another one of the texts. I believe it's Padma Purana. He says, "Very well, you say he's everywhere. Then I'm going to cut off your head. And if he's everywhere and will protect you because you're getting your power from the same place I am, then let him come and protect you." And Lord Nisringadeva appeared from the pillar, because the Bhagavatam says, "Is he in this pillar?" "Yes." Now, we don't we're not qualified like Prahlad. We don't see Lord Vishnu everywhere. He is, we know, he's philosophically, he is everywhere. Everywhere means literally everywhere. He's within every, in the material realm. Within the heart of every soul. Within every, that means within every living entity. There's lots of blades of grass out there. Some more look like they're going to be coming up in a while after the seeding of the soil is complete. And how many living entities are in Naperville? You know, insects and birds and et cetera, et cetera. But there's super souls everywhere within the heart of every living entity, and Paramanu Chirantarastam. Anu means tiny in size. Paramanu means the smallest division of matter. Of course, atoms have subparts to them, but you know, the unit is an atom. And he's within every atom. How many atoms are there in Naperville? How many atoms are there in the head of a pin? But he's within every atom and within the heart of every living entity. Vishnu is everywhere. That's his expanded feature, Paramatma feature. And the function of Paramatma is he oversees adhyaksha. He oversees prakriti. Maya adhyakshena prakriti. Maya adhyaksha prakriti. Suyate sacharacharam. For all moving and non-moving living entities. He oversees prakriti. So he, the guna and karma, the movements of prakriti, are overseen by him. He has potencies like the time potency, kala shakti, by which he moves matter. But he doesn't do anything, he's neutral. He just, by his potencies, he moves matter, corresponding to the guna and karma of the living entity. And so the world moves. The cars are moving up and down on the street out there. And without super soul, without prakriti, it's compared in Bhagavad Gita to a yantra or a machine, not just the car, it's the whole of the material energy. And the car needs a driver. Otherwise it doesn't move. And the driver needs time, otherwise it doesn't move. So the potencies, in short, the potencies of material creation are overseen by Vishnu, and he's everywhere. And a devotee of the caliber of Prahlad, Kashyap, is saying, he can see that both inside by his meditation process and outside by his bhakti capacity. And what form does Vishnu take? Well, he has multifarious forms that are eternal, and they're not coming into being and going out of being like forms of this world, the trees and the grass and the birds and the human form, and I am so-and-so, this is my name, this is my family name, and this is my age, and all of those things are changing over in this direction of time and that direction of time. It's always changing. So the forms of Vishnu, they're not changing. They don't come into being, stay for some time, and go out of being. They don't, so it's eternal forms. And he manifests, this is a very interesting science, he manifests a form according to the affection or the regard that the devotee has for him. He doesn't show his form to non-devotee, he shows his form to the devotee. Just listening to Prabhupada explaining. Supposing you meet somebody, you don't immediately begin asking them, how's everything with your wife? And, you know, how does one understand the details, the intimate details of a person's life? Even if you ask that question, you've got an answer, you wouldn't really understand it because you don't understand the person. An interesting example. So to understand, to see the form of Krishna requires a devotion to Krishna, or to see a form of Lord Nrisimha, to see one of the forms of Vishnu. It requires devotion. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrita mudhoyam nabhijanati. Krishna says, I don't show my form to the foolish persons, the mudhas. I reserve that right. A person doesn't show everything about their personal life to a foolish person. But if someone becomes very dear to them, they may disclose all kinds of things. It's just we do. Why the Supreme Lord Vishnu can't do. He does. And to those who are connected to him with service and love and devotion, he discloses. And he discloses that feature that is corresponding to the feature of their heart. They understand, just like our discussion yesterday, Premananda's question of, you know, how much can we, when we see something or experience something, how much can we understand it's the picture of reality and how much of it is our conditioning or in our past experiences? Well, it's some of both. Now, go to the platform where you have souls that are not conditioned souls. According to our Bhagavatam and Brihat Bhagavatamrita even, it's in the spiritual world, the Supreme Lord appears before someone according to the affection they have for the Supreme Lord. Very interesting. It's the land of love. And in a loving dealing, the lovable object reciprocates with the love of the beloved, and vice versa. It's a nice place. And there's no selfishness on either part, the lover or the beloved. That's what we want. And you are going about it in ways that won't get us what we want. So we're never satisfied. No matter what, we're never satisfied. And there is a place where one can be satisfied. The place of love. That place, so in that place of love, Prahlad has such quality. He sees, it doesn't say specifically, Kashyapa to Diti, he'll see the form of Lord Nrisimhadev. But even when he saw the form of Lord Nrisimhadev, he understood this is Vishnu. He's just a little boy. But he understood he's that all-pervasive Supreme Lord. And he's appearing in that form of Lord Nrisimhadev specifically to drive away whatever fear Prahlad may feel, or any who hear about Prahlad may feel. This topic yesterday evening is overcoming negative emotion. Fear is one of them. That's a negative emotion. How do you overcome fear? Take shelter of Lord Nrisimhadev. That feature of him is specific to help the devotee, that's us, become overcome by fear. And what's the root, like one of the topics yesterday, where does negative emotion arise from? Well, that presentation was for the public. But within the Bhagavatam, fear arises from abhinivesh, or absorption in dvatiyam, in duality. Like, you know, the bodily conception of life. Fear arises from the bodily conception of life. If you want to become free from fear, it's not just become desireless, become free from ignorance. Negative emotions arise from ignorance. Suffering arises from ignorance. This is our Vedic teaching. Suffering, Buddhism teaches, suffering arises from desire. So become desireless. But our Vedic teaching is, because Buddha rejected the Vedas, the Vedic teaching is desire is of the soul, because the soul, the tiny part of the Supreme Soul, this is our theology, and the Supreme Soul has unlimited free will. So down here, the tiny spark has tiny free will. He has unlimited desires for and capacity for enjoyment. We have a small desire and capacity for enjoyment. Desire isn't the problem. It's misuse of it. Misuse of our free will and ignorant desires causes ignorant activities, causes suffering. The problem, the root cause, is ignoring Krishna. Solution? Turn your attention to Krishna. Manmana. Bhavamadbhakto. It's very, very consistent, for sure. Somebody may say, oh, how do you know? Well, we know from the perfect source of knowledge. How do we know anything? You can know something through your senses, imperfect. Through your mind, imperfect. Through descending knowledge from a perfect person, that's perfect. So, and it's very consistent. The science of the soul. And it's not a belief, it's a science. And when through science you can hypothesis, experiment, observation, conclusion. One description, eighth grade science, you'll learn about science. That's science. Here's the hypothesis. It's not just hypothesis. It's fact. But there's a tiny part and parcel of the entity that has qualities like the Supreme. So we have desire. You can anesthetize some person, and when anesthesia wears off, desire returns. And even in that anesthetized state, it's just held in abeyance. It's not gone. It's just covered, deeply covered with anesthesia. So you can try to become anesthetized by becoming desireless. But it's not the nature of the soul. The problem is not desire. The problem is ignorance that influences ignorant desire. So how do you get free from ignorance? Well, it's opposites. It's knowledge. You can overcome darkness by light. Turn on the light. Fear is gone. And all other negative emotions. This higher consciousness on the pyramid. Go there. What's it like there? Well, here's what it's like there. And when you're there, and there's this knowledge of who is Vishnu, he accepts the form that matches your affection. That's the nature of that realm. Now, for people that have deeply rooted convictions in the material laws of nature, it sounds fanciful. I was listening recently, a week ago, I listened to it three times, a conversation in New York City, 1975, July, Prabhupada in New York City with Newsday magazine, and it went about 35 minutes over again and over again and over again. The man was asking, his position was, Swamiji, you're depriving the world of the gifts that your followers have to give to the world. That's my understanding. Could you respond to that? He kept saying it over and over again in different language, but that was his position. And Prabhupada was saying over and over again, and the man didn't get it. The difficulty in understanding a spiritual organization is a material conception of life. And until you become free from the material conception of life, you cannot understand, I can explain to you, but you cannot understand a spiritual organization, because the lens that you're looking through doesn't understand who we really are. So let me give you a lesson. He didn't use this language. Let me give you a lesson, a little allegory to understand what a spiritual organization is and what it does. And the example he gave over and over was a car and a driver. And the car needs petrol. Prabhupada's diction, he couldn't understand the devotees, gasoline. So a car needs petrol. But the driver doesn't need petrol. The driver knows the car needs petrol, but the driver needs food. So all we're saying, the spiritual organization, is you're the driver. And the car, without the driver, isn't useful. It's useless. It'll sit there and rust. Won't be doing anything useful. So you can pay attention to the car, but don't neglect the driver of the car. And the driver of the car is you. You're not the car. And the man kept asking the same question and asking the same question. And asking, he Prabhupada tried it in different ways, and he kept going, you know, do you understand? Do you accept? I mean, Prabhupada could have said all kinds of things. He could have said, we do encourage our members to make significant contributions to the world, but we want to make sure they don't neglect who they really are while they're doing that, and thinking that's fulfilling my duty in life, is I'm putting petrol in the car. I'm adding value to the material part of life. We don't say don't do that. Prabhupada didn't say don't do that. He gave emphasis to self, and that's what a spiritual organization does. It helps people awaken to the necessities of the soul within. Awakening spiritual consciousness of who we really are while we're making our contributions to the temporary as part of the worldly aspect of our duties of life, which we also want to do that for that higher purpose, for the service to Krishna, not just make the car polished and make it run. He didn't do that. He could have done that. He just kept emphasis because his point was, you won't be able to understand a spiritual organization if you don't understand the difference between the driver of the car and the car. And the example is appropriate even from Bhagavad Gita's standpoint, because the body is the whole, not just the body, the whole material nature is called the yantra, which means a machine. And we're seated on the machine made of the material energy, and we're moving. Zoom, zoom, zoom. There we go. But we're the passenger or the driver. We're not the body. And one can't understand a spiritual organization if one doesn't, in fact, clearly understand that. We'll have another idea. We'll have this, like Premananda's question, we'll have, based upon our experience, you know, I understand piety, and I should do good things, because that's what pious people do. And Krishna consciousness should do good things for the machine. And that's what a spiritual organization is supposed to do. Good things for the machine. This is, you know, the community and etc., you know, our families. We don't say don't do those things. But that's not the essence of what a spiritual organization is meant to do. Spiritual organization is meant to awaken God consciousness. Love, loving service to the Supreme, through those activities, through all activities. Yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, dadasi, yad. Yat pashyasi kaunteya, tat karasya madarpanam. That's what a spiritual organization is meant to do, not philanthropy. It doesn't say don't do things. Don't let it stop there. It starts with understanding who you are. And it's a challenge because our convictions are deeply rooted in what we're not. We're attached to the temporary. And trying to like put in Krishna and stir. It starts, you're not the body. And then work without attachment. Sankhya yoga, karma yoga, or buddhi yoga. Practical. So back to the verse, Prahlad is being told about him that he'll be able to see both within and without personality of Godhead, who his internal potency is the goddess of fortune. People are enamored by fortune. And they want to become the enjoyer of Lakshmi without Narayan, or Sita without Ram, or Radha without Krishna. Fortune without the kingdom of God, without God. But she's always by his side. And his form is beautifully decorated. Just one ornament is mentioned, but the intention is his features are beautiful, the goddess of fortune is beautiful, and he has all opulences. That's Bhagavan. Sad Aishvarya Purna. He has all opulences in full. So he's decorated very beautifully. Beyond our imagination of like beautiful decorations. When there's a wedding, the bride is often decorated in, you know, different ways according to culture. And that is just a shadow reflection of the opulence of and the decoration of the goddess of fortune and Lord Vishnu. So Kashyapa knows that. He is of that quality himself. And Prahlad will be of that quality himself. So Diti's very fortunate. She's hearing about her good fortune, specific to her grandson and the quality of the pure devotee grandson. So she's, before she becomes a grandmother, she's a proud grandmother. Okay. Any discussion? What happens?
The second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Second canto of Virat Purusha, okay.
There is explanation of devatas and asuras being different parts of the body of Purusha.
Yes.
And here we also hear the explanation that they are sons of Diti and Aditi. So how do we reconcile them?
I don't see the reconciliation conflict. They're the unfolding of creation is the narration of Purana, and the picture of that universal form tells the story without all the chronological sequence. We'll say it differently. Same thing. Every morning, this is, I don't know the exact reference, but I read it in Tamal Krishnamurti's review of Brahma Samhita. Every morning, when Brahma wakes up, he does his sadhana. And part of his sadhana is the impression of the universal form enters into him, which is then, because he has to recreate. So the whole picture of his service is given in the form of the universal form. And then it unfolds, because he has that creative potency, Srishti Shakti. And so we're hearing the unfolding based upon the universal form that Brahma enters into. He becomes absorbed in. Now, Brahma is not just a universal form meditator. He's a devotee of Krishna. But it's part of what he does for his service. He gets the impression that, you know, these people that are doing this construction work, they got a plan. The Brahma just follows the plan. That's the universal form. That's the blueprint. Okay, go to work. Boom. Okay.
So among Diti and Aditi, you Aditi, I mean Diti yourself, you were fortunate. Was she more fortunate than Diti?
What do you think? No. Because what's the standard of good fortune is pleasing the personality of Godhead. So what she did was sinful. It was not, that's not pleasing to the personality of Godhead. That's the standard of good fortune. Although she was this exalted person, and you could look at the verses, a few verses back, Kasyapa says, because you're an unalloyed devotee of Vishnu and Lord Shiva, and gives three other qualifications, you'll have this good fortune, your grandson will be da-da-da-da. But because you're an exalted devotee of Vishnu, you can't do something that's sinful. She did. So that's misfortune. A transcendental misfortune. Now, why did something like that happen? How does Krishna see a person who does sudurachar? Sees them as sadhu. But part of the unfolding plan of the Supreme Lord is there has to be a qualified mother for Jayan Vijay. Diti, you're the mother of Jayan Vijay. So one can look at it, it's just yoga maya, she was just following the dictate of the internal potency. But she was envious. And she was crossing the line of codes of conduct, both, and she did it, knowingly. That's not good fortune. Aditi had as her son Vamana, with no crossing of lines of proper conduct, etc. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada, Kate?